Okay? So Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, perfection of renunciation, text number 9. Karyam ityeva yakarma niyatam kriyatarjana sangam tyakva palam chaiva satyaga satviko mataha. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. Please repeat. O Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. Purport. Prescribed duties must be performed with this mentality. One should act without attachment to the result. He should be disassociated from the modes of work. A man working in Krishna consciousness in a factory does not associate himself with the work of the factory, nor with the workers of the factory. He simply works for Krishna. And when he gives up the result for Krishna, he is acting transcendentally. So the verse again, Karyam ityeva yakarma kriyate niyatam kriyate jana sangam tyaktva palam chaiva satyagat satviko mataha. O Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. Purport. Oh, yes, sir. Mam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Putre, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasvatam Deve, Gauravani Percharne, Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya De Siddharne. There are two stages in our advancement towards Krishna consciousness. Before we become conscious of Krishna, or fully conscious of Krishna, or actually transcendentally conscious of Krishna, then we have to first of all become liberated from our material conceptions. As we've heard, to try to light a fire and pour water on it at the same time makes for a very difficult time for lighting fires. So first we have to dry the wood out. And the analogy is that in the material world, the modes of ignorance and passion are the water that wets our consciousness and doesn't allow us to actually enter into the fire of Krishna consciousness. And as it mentions here, some of the reasons that the mode of ignorance and passion arise, one of them is the attachment to our work, the results of our work. Generally, the conditioned soul is imagining himself to be the proprietor of this material world. And of course, to be a proprietor, you have something, you need something to have as the owner. Therefore, the conditioned soul is imagining that this body is the owner of so many things, which is quite an illusion, because what is actually this body? If we analyze it, it's a network of all kinds of things. There's all kinds of tubes in the body running up and down the body. There's a digestive tube. Is that the owner of everything? Then there's the blood cells and the blood capillaries. And then there's the arteries and veins. And then there is all kinds of the heart and the liver. All these things are constantly working and pumping things and getting rid of things. And is that what's the owner of everything in this world? But the fact is that the conditioned soul is not the owner of his body. In order to be the owner of something, we have to be able to control it. You can't say, I own something, but have no control over it. It's like walking into a bank, the bank, Slovinsky Bank. Is there a Slovinsky Bank? What's that? Slovenska Banka. And walking in there and just throwing up your arms and saying, I renounce all the money, you can have it all back. But since it was never yours in the first place, because there's probably not very much money in there anyhow. Anyhow, but giving it all back is ridiculous because it was never yours in the first place. So similarly, to think we're the proprietor of this world, or that we're not the proprietor, we're just renouncing our proprietorship, is foolish because we're not the body. And nor is the body very permanent. It's always changing. And everything we're imagining that we're controlling is also changing. It's like putting your hands in sand and thinking on the Lord of whatever the sand is now as it runs out your hand. Therefore, this whole desire to become the Lord of something in the material world is just a dream which can never be fulfilled. Indeed, Hiranyakashipu underwent a severe austerity for 120 years of the demigods with his arms upraised, no food, no water, and eventually no air. Because after raising his hands for 120 years of the demigods, gradually the ants and the worms and other insects ate his skin and his flesh and his organs. So eventually they ate his lungs. So he couldn't breathe any more air because there was no lungs to breathe them with. And they ate his brains. So he couldn't do anything. Actually, if he had any brains, he would be standing there for 120 years. So it was obvious they ate his brains. And yet, after undergoing this very severe austerity and getting a benediction from Brahma, because Brahma is obliged to award us benedictions for those who undergo such severe austerities, still, he couldn't get the benediction where he'd actually be able to be permanent here in this material world. Because as Brahma said, even he who lives for 311 trillion, 40 billion years of our years, even he has to die. So how can he give a benediction to someone else that they won't die? Indeed, the whole material universe disappears after some time. So, Hiranyakashipu, by his austerities, could not become the controller of the material universe, although he got some benedictions that made it appear, at least for some time, that he was controlling some part of the universe. Therefore, to give up this idea that we're the proprietor is not possible either, because the nature of illusory energy is that it has us convinced that we are the body and that we are controlling things and that we are the doers. Only by engaging oneself in Krishna service ultimately can one get free from such illusions. Of course, Krishna service generally to us means chanting Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna, the transcendental activities, but also there are prescribed duties according to one's varna and ashram. And those are supposed to be done as a sacrifice for Vishnu. The original varna ashram system was not just a mechanical system where people would, in a regimented way, would follow a particular varna or ashram. No, the whole idea that they had was to please Vishnu. They did their duty as a sacrifice for Vishnu. Ultimately, everyone worked together for the sacrifice. And there was actual sacrifices. It wasn't just a name only. Just as we have the Sankirtan sacrifice, the Sankirtan Yoga, where we're chanting Hare Krishna either with beads or out loud, either in the temple or on the streets. So they would have a big sacrifices where they have huge arenas made out of gold and silver, and expert Brahmins chanting mantras and sacrifices of cows and horses and bringing them back to life and throwing huge amount of ghee and gold and jewels into the fire sacrifice, chanting the names of the demigods and Vishnu, ultimately trying to satisfy Vishnu by such a ritualistic ceremony. And the Vaishyas, they produce the wealth, and the kings would tax the wealth, but which the and then be utilized for sacrifices. And the Brahmins would be trained up to perform the sacrifice, and the Shudras would assist everyone else in the performance of the sacrifice. So it wasn't that people were just kings or Brahmins or Vaishyas or Shudras and it was all disconnected. No, it was all centered around sacrifice. And sacrifice for who? Sacrifice for Vishnu. And everyone had their duty in that sacrifice. Of course, it was much easier. People are not distracted. Nowadays, people think they have no duty. They're just, you know, imagining that they're going to be happy in some perverted way. And of course, it's all based usually upon some imaginary that they're Radha and Krishna. That they're Romeo and Juliet, or they're Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, or some combination of Tarzan and Jane. They're just imagining something in this world. But it's all empty. It never actually gives them the satisfaction, what to speak of the illumination, discovery of their own selves or anyone else. The more they discover about themselves in this modern age, the more they become disgusted. The more they realize about the other people, the more they realize they're wasting their time. Because people are not trained to develop higher qualities, so when you find your soulmate, you find out your soulmate is just full of lust, anger, and greed like you are. That's why you're compatible. Therefore, by performance of prescribed duties, not being attached to the results of the work, one comes to goodness, and the whole idea of goodness is that one could actually sacrifice for Vishnu. The work being done would actually be done with not any alternative motive, that somehow or another I'm going to gain something. This idea of gaining something is poison for the soul, because the more he gains in the material world, the more he becomes entangled, or the more he thinks he's gaining. And as soon as he thinks he's gaining something, he'll always be fearful of losing it. And therefore, he'll always be entangled by these thoughts of gain and loss. But if one does everything dutifully, unattached to the results, then there is room to think about Krishna, to become Krishna conscious. Then one actually does his activities to please Vishnu or Krishna. And that's really sacrifice. Then one's original spiritual nature can be awakened, and in the spiritual world, there's no anxiety because everyone has an eternal body. There's no need to get any result from one's work. Simply the love that one has with performing that work is sufficient to satisfy oneself and everyone else. The love produces unlimited pleasure, and that pleasure is always increasing, and everyone's contributing to it. Ultimately, the love between Radha and Krishna nourishes the entire spiritual world. And a little fragment, a perverted reflection of that, nourishes the material world. And one is fortunate enough to give up the results of one's work, the attachment to them, perform one's prescribed duty, and then think of trying to please Krishna, the result is that one can actually enter into the transcendental nature, which is eternal, where there is no anxiety over gain or loss, and with simply the desire to please Krishna and Krishna's associates, and that will actually please oneself in whatever one is doing. Though it's not so important what we're doing externally. Of course, that should be done as a matter of duty, according to authorities, whatever it may be, if it's done, is sufficient to give us the background by which we can concentrate our mind and give our love to Krishna, and that way actually associate with the unlimited reservoirs of bliss and consciousness that eternally exists in the spiritual world. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Comments? Well, we don't really have anything either. If you have something, you must be able to control it. You say, I have something. Like I say, this is my book. But I can't, it's only my book because my hand is touching it right now. But I can't change the book. The book is changing at every moment. 50 years, it won't be a book like this anymore. It's only in my imagination, I think, it's my book. Someone else may come along and take it away from me. So how is it my book? And even if someone doesn't take it away from me, eventually the book is going to disappear, all the paper will degenerate, the whole thing is going to disappear. So I'm just imagining that these things are mine. Even my body is always changing. So soon my body is going to disappear. So how can I say it belongs to me? In 50 years or less, this body, or everyone's body in 100 years, as it says, there will be ashes or a stool, or it will become dust. If it's burnt in the fire, it becomes ashes. Seen by the worms or the other insects, it becomes like dirt. If it's eaten by the jackals or the vultures, it becomes stool. So how can those things own this book? We're trying to be the proprietors, we're trying to be the controllers, but it's not possible for the soul, because he's not directly engaged in the activities of material nature. What's that? The super soul is the controller. The soul is only desire, and the super soul is the one who's arranging everything through his energies. Anything else? Thank you very much. Karantaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.